Are you standing at a crossroad in life, being called to express yourself in a new way? You could ignore the nudging, or you could answer the call and change the trajectory of your life. Hi, I'm Mary Jo Rathke, life transition coach and host of the Creative Directions for Living podcast. I invite you to join me on a journey to explore your potential for expression and step onto a path filled with purpose and possibility. So today we have a very special guest, Julie Jakopik. And Julie is a strategist, a catalyst, and a champion for change makers. She's one of the nation's top organizational and leadership development consultants. And she's a game changer who has shared the stage with luminaries such as President Barack Obama and change agent Neil Donald Walsh. And Julie is on a mission to help leaders create more meaningful success in their professional and personal lives. And she empowers leaders to overcome the pressure and overwhelm that comes with carrying a great responsibility in working for change. And she's a sought after for her perspective on leadership, politics, and women, and is a frequent commentator who has appeared on or in CBS, NBC, Vanity Fair, and Sirius XM. And at the end of the day, what Julie is really wanting you to realize about her is that she's a consultant that you want in the foxhole with her. She can help you manage and, more importantly, prevent crises. So welcome, Julie.
Thank you.
And so today, what we're going to be talking about is about power and the use of power. And it's so interesting. I like to start with a definition. And when I looked up the definition of power, it was half of a column in the dictionary. There's so many different definitions of power. But the first one is really the ability or capacity to perform or act effectively, and strength or force exerted or capable of being exerted, and might. And I'm just curious what your reaction to that definition is and how you are actually defining power.
So I think of power or someone using power anytime they have to convince somebody else to do something.
Okay. So
that can include your kids to make their bed. It can include your boss to make a decision. It can include an audience you need to get to take an action. Call their congressman, schedule time with you, whatever.
Right. So really using power to influence.
I think it's actually all about influence and relationships. And I think a lot of people are a little allergic to that word.
Why?
Well, I think I think for people who are allergic to the word, they see power as a thing to be abused. And they, I think, often are concerned about the misuse of power.
Okay.
And I am too. That's why I want some.
Okay. And why do you think power is so often misused or feared of being misused?
Well, I think there's a few answers to that. I live in outside Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
We're recording this 2 days before the electoral vote is counted.
Yes.
Clearly, from a government perspective, I think there are people, and they would not be wrong, who see power is being held by people potentially different than them,
mm-hmm.
who don't understand them, who make decisions about their lives. And that can be worrisome.
Yes.
Going down a political path, which I certainly can, and Google will help you do that if you want to know about me, but I actually think it's an apolitical statement. But the people I work with in this town who are making policy decisions, implementing policy and programs, are making decisions that in fact impact a lot of other people. If you don't like those decisions, then the power to make them is something that you think at best should belong to somebody else and maybe sometimes think shouldn't exist. And I think that's the mistake. I I am a firm believer that power, I think, you know, there's sort of competing schools. There's a school of thought, although there's some research behind the side of this that I'm going to take, that power corrupts. But what power does is amplify. So if you were likely to be corrupt, you're going to be corrupted, and it's going to be bigger, and you're going to see it. And if you were going to do good for others, it's going to be bigger, and you're going to see it. Power just more power just makes it more visible.
Okay. So what you're saying is that power doesn't actually change a person. It amplifies who they already are.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's
well, and if you think about it, you make decisions. Mm-hmm. If you had more power, you would make more of them, or the decisions, right? Like, you know, you'd be deciding about more people. It's unlikely that your underlying values are going to change. It's far more likely that we're going to amplify what those are. And if they weren't the ones that I have, I might not like it.
Right, right. So that's a very good reminder to people, you know, when you are voting people into power or voting people out of power, you know, to exercise their own power to have that,
you know, without
cast. Yes.
Yeah, without going too far down the road, one of the first clients I helped win a race won by 16 votes.
Wow.
If you think your vote doesn't matter, 16.
Wow.
In 2017, the party in charge of the state house in Richmond, Virginia, the state in which I live, was determined by a single vote.
Wow. Wow. That's powerful.
like people have more power than they think.
Yes. So that's a really interesting statement. People have more power than they think. And how does that play out in an ordinary life or an ordinary business?
I think that it plays out in a bunch of ways. So if you're a solopreneur, there's all kinds of ideas about what you should and shouldn't be doing. Mm-hmm. And we tend to make decisions, you know, how narrow should your niche be? What should you charge? All these decisions. And you and I have both been in rooms where somebody says, well, I could never charge that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Says who? Now, you might not get paid that, but there's no reason you can't charge it
mm-hmm.
and find out, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. I think it plays out in our businesses. I could never, they won't do it if I ask, right? But so we don't ask. And, you know, I'm somebody who used to be more likely to crawl across cut glass in the middle of a night in a thunderstorm than ask for help.
Mm.
And I spent a summer, good exercise for listeners if you've never done this, making sure you ask for something every day.
Okay.
You'd be surprised what you will learn. And then I actually did run for office 5 years ago, where my only job basically was to ask for votes or money to tell people about me so they would vote for me. I mean, it was literally, I would walk in the door of my house and my campaign manager would say, what did you get? And if I hadn't asked for anything, it'd be pretty likely I get handed a phone or then go ask.
Yeah, go back out there. You haven't done your job.
And what I learned is people will say yes. Funny.
Wow.
If they can say yes, they will say yes. If they can, you know, they would, we all want to be liked. We all want, not all the time, but we all kind of want to be liked. We all want to find our way to yes for people. And so, you know, we make all these decisions for other people about what they will or won't do. And when we do that, we actually take away our power and their power.
Mm.
Right? If I don't ask you because I think you're going to say no, then I didn't give myself the power to ask, and I didn't give you the power to say yes.
Or even the power to say no.
but right. I decided for you. Right. And the reason we don't do it is we're afraid the other people will say no. So that's a way. I think, you know, it might surprise people. I've worked with people at all kinds of levels, and I think they all are people are much more alike than they are different across those levels. And so I can think about talking to somebody I was working with who ran a large federal program and said, you know, let me start that story over.
Okay.
Gave it away. and I can get away with that.
Yes.
I was thinking about somebody I was working with who was very frustrated. She had just had yet another meeting with her boss where she had been trying to get a point across and change the name of an effort, and had been for a lot of her career and was totally frustrated. She's like, I'm always the canary in the coal mine. I'm always nagging them. They always say no. And I'm really sick of it. Like, in my next job, I'm not going to play this role.
Okay.
And I said, okay, you have this job for another 2 years. The boss you're complaining about is the president.
Mm. The president.
Of the United States.
Okay. Big boss.
It is frustrating. You have played this role all of your career. You're absolutely right. Think you can stand it for 2 more years? Like, as I told that story, I'm sure listeners are like, oh, that's me. I'm the one who says we got to fix. I'm the one, right? I'm the one who calls attention. Same problem, 6 levels above where, right? It's the same kinds of problems.
Mm.
You know, the same person actually shared with me something that I thought was brilliant, because it also goes with climbing those internal ladders and why so many of the people we both know have opted out of corporate, although I kind of feel like my job is to figure out how to help them stay and do good.
Yes.
But one of the reasons is what this person would refer to as the bullshit to productivity ratio.
The bullshit to productivity ratio. Tell me about that.
Well, so, you know, what people think as you climb the ladder is you get more power and less trouble. You do get more control. That's actually one of the reasons that people sometimes higher up are more satisfied. But now, instead of 20 personnel problems, you have 2,000 personnel problems.
Depending on how high the client
writing that paper, yes. You got staff for that, and you got to manage all of those people, and you don't actually get to do the stuff anymore.
Right, right.
I mean, that's part of why I went out on my own, was I missed the doing of stuff.
Mm. Yeah, so actually there's two things that I want to address here. One is your own story. And the other one is something you just said, which is super interesting and very different than what you hear a lot of career coaches or consultants doing, which is, you said, I help people stay in their jobs.
So I think people don't quit companies, they quit bosses.
Okay.
And I think that if all of the smart, competent, capable, fun, good people leave large organizations are going to be even harder to work for than they are now.
Mm.
Okay. And we'll get them, part one. Part two, not everybody should be running their own business. And I know that there are thousands of people, you and I could probably go sit down in separate corners and make a list of 20, and only 4 of them are the same people who want to teach you how to build your own business.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like talking to other people, you shouldn't be doing it. If you would prefer to write or crunch numbers, you shouldn't be doing it. If you can't get comfortable learning to ask for stuff,
mm-hmm.
That's what sales is. Sales is an invitation to purchase at best. Sales is an opportunity to invest in your future and ask people to do it. If that terrifies you, running your own business is just, you're going to have an even worse boss.
Yourself.
You, right? Like, that's not where you right.
You'll have the boss that say, you go do this. I'm not going to do it, but you have to go do it.
and then you're going to have to explain to yourself why you didn't and why there's no money in the bank, because there ain't right. nobody else who's going to do it at the beginning.
Right.
And so there's that part. And I'll tell my story in a second, but I really believe we need to figure out how to help people stay, how to make the business of doing your job and running an organization something you actually look forward to doing. And I am one of those rare people. So, you know, you asked about my story. And one of the things that I didn't want going out on my own is I actually like supervising people. I actually like developing other people. I didn't want to be out by myself because I missed that role. And I like helping other people do it well. So what I ended up doing is I was at that time a consultant in a government contracting firm. Mm-hmm. I had a client come to me who said, we really want you. And the firm you're currently with is not on the vehicle we need to use to hire. Hmm. Here's a list of 25 other places that you might work if you were remotely willing to think about this. And I was, because I had gotten to the point where, again, that bullshit to productivity ratio, I had been hired to straighten out a mess, which I did, mm-hmm. to build a relationship with a client. And I was really kind of hired at the client's request in some ways. Mm-hmm. And I cleaned up the mess and we were well regarded across the client. And I built a team who worked well together and liked their jobs. And so now I was sitting in a corner office with a beautiful view of the trees in the park.
Many people's dreams.
I'm sorry?
Many people's dreams.
Yes. And I was bored to death because mm-hmm. all I did was negotiate subcontracts with people doing work I wanted to be doing and signing invoices. I'm perfectly capable of those tasks. Mm. Not very exciting to me. I actually want to go out and change the world still.
Yeah.
And so when this client came to me, I was like, that could be half my work. And then the other half, I can be writing and teaching and speaking and digging my hands into the production side of changing the world. And I would have a much better bullshit to productivity ratio, right? Like I'd still get to supervise people. I'd still get to do the development stuff. I'd push less paper. And I'd actually get to go do the other stuff. And so since about 2008, that's what I've been doing. So I, you know, get to advise senior folks, both in government and in this organization. And I still have that very same client. Mm. And I spend the other half my life, or better than half my life, working with leaders to figure out where they want their organizations to go and how to get there, and then supporting them while they do it. And then a part of my practice, I would love to say that people ask for help to stay out of crisis. We don't. We get into trouble, we ask for help, and then we make sure we never do that again. And so another chunk of my work is helping people weather a crisis that, quite honestly, they probably should have been prepared for.
Okay. How did you get into this particular line of business?
Sort of the content of the first third of my career was in the sort of human, first part of my career was in retail. And then I did human service work for a long time. And it was about education and interest. And I was pretty young. And then built from there. The work I'm doing now, you know, I'm reminded of an afternoon that, you know, it was just a normal day and I was in the restroom at work and our assistant Jessica came flying into the bathroom screaming, Julie, you have to come back to the office right now. Your mother's on the phone. The police are at her house and there's a woman with an axe.
What?
That was what she expected. And I kind of calmly said, you said the police are there? And she said, yeah. And I said, then tell my mother I'll call her when I get out of the bathroom. And she said, but you don't understand. There's a woman with an axe and the police are there. And I said, and now my mother has made you crazy. And I'm sure there is a woman with an axe, but I'm also sure there is nothing I can do from Capitol Hill that the police can't do better on site in Fairfax. So I will call her when I get out of the bathroom. As you might imagine, that was not the first crisis I've ever had with my mother.
Doesn't sound like it. Oh my gosh.
I've been her kid. At that point, I'd been her kid quite a while. I am still her kid. We got on the phone talking today about some arrangements for her at 90. And so I was really good at crisis. It probably is somewhat genetic, like literally came built for this. I think some of it is I've just had a whole lot more experience than most people. Henceforth, why I didn't go flying out of the bathroom because my mother was upset.
Right.
and I don't rattle easily. So I was kind of built for it. And I think in a world that is changing faster than ever before, we need more people like me. Like I like to help build people like me. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, the stuff we call crisis is not. Sorry. If you run a program that serves small children, a kid will be injured, period. They're going to fall off a swing set. They're going to trip in the hall. You're going to have an injured kid. If you have a business on the Gulf of Mexico, there will be a hurricane. Maybe not this year. There will be one.
That's sometimes not five in a year.
It's going to happen. And those are big ones. But I also will tell you that if you have computers in your office, somebody's looking at porn. Right? If lots of people have access to money, some of it might disappear. If you run a business that has long days, lots of travel, a big range in age, and sometimes there's alcohol, somebody's going to get harassed. These aren't actually surprises, and we are not prepared for them. And I get the phone call that's like, I'm sober this morning, but, or we just had to fire a client because of how they treated this person on my team, or, right? And that's not when you want to fix it. We can fix it. I hope you have some relationships with reporters in your town before. You know, I hope there's a static version of your website so we aren't watching people post things. Right? But, you know, I hope that there's some personnel policies that are going to guide this decision, even if you don't like them. Let the policies be awful. You can be nicer. All of these things are fixable. And then we can, like, never do them again. And I think, you know, as we come through this year, most people didn't have work from home policies. Most people's rules about technology were designed to solve that problem of the people looking at porn, not make sure that they had safe ways to transfer files and share files. Most people, right, as we, and there's all kinds of other stuff. And so, you know, I'd much rather talk to you when it's easy and we can fix it and we can pretend you have a problem. Make much better decisions.
But it sounds like prevention is much better than having to manage crisis.
Well, it isn't, is for a few reasons, right? So A, those ones we can identify. I mean, I would say to you right now, what are three things you worry can happen to your business? And let's get you prepared for them now. And if you do that, two things happen. A, you're prepared for the ones that are likely. B, you have a roadmap to plan for the ones that happen.
That you didn't see coming.
That you didn't see coming. Because that stuff happens too, right? But some of the stuff, who's in charge? Who's the crisis manager? Who's talking to who? Because right now, and for probably the rest of our lifetimes, and I suspect forever, the question isn't whether or not somebody will find out the thing we don't want them to. It's when will they find it? How fast will they find it?
Wow. Okay.
Because the news cycle's 24/7 and there isn't enough real stuff.
So people have to make stuff up. Is that what you're saying?
Well, everybody's a reporter.
Right.
Everybody's a reporter. I mean, even the reporters are now their own camera people. Often, and that was happening anyway. Thank you, COVID. It's happened a lot more. Like the number of people, even that you watch on whatever interview live show, now has a child, husband, spouse, sibling, neighbor, kid as their producer.
Interesting.
Right. And so content is, there's just a ton of content. Interesting and juicy.
So what would be, I'm just curious, what would be one tip, you know, that you could just give people as a blanket, you know, do this one thing and you will save yourself a whole heck of a lot of trouble?
I will give you, it's I think four things, but it's the cover of a book. So Lanny Davis, who people now know as Michael Cohen's attorney, was Bill Clinton's attorney during the attempt to impeach Bill Clinton.
Okay.
And at the end, he wrote a book, and the book is called Truth to Tell, and the cover looks like an old-fashioned yellow legal pad. And I might not get this in the right order, but it is my prescription almost 100% of the time.
Okay.
Tell the truth, tell it all, tell it first, tell it yourself.
Okay.
You tell it before other people do. You decide how the story goes. Like, you control the message and you get it over with. If you did something stupid, say you're sorry and mean it and move on. And if anybody wonders what I mean by mean it, I'm really sorry I hurt your feelings is not a fucking apology. Did I say that? If anybody's wondering what I mean by meaning it, I'm really sorry you felt bad after I did whatever it is I did is not an actual apology.
What does your actual apology sound
like? Blaming somebody else for having feelings. An apology is, I'm sorry. Period.
Interesting.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And here's how I'm never going to do it again.
Okay. And
period.
Make it right or just never do it again.
Either here's how I'm going to make it right or here's how it's never happening again. But an apology in which you actually take responsibility is a real apology. An apology where you are still blaming other people for reacting to something you didn't mean in a way you didn't mean it is not taking responsibility.
Interesting. Very interesting. And so I am curious if you can connect the dots for us as far as, like, you know, bring this, loop this back to your definition of power.
So maybe the most important thing anybody ever taught me about power was that the way you get more is to give more away, which probably doesn't go completely with the beginning of our conversation. But if we think about working inside organizations, the more I empower other people to make decisions, the more power I have. So if I were being very megalomaniacal about it, when I let you make a decision, you owe me. You got your power from me, right? So even if I were being obnoxious about it, but more importantly, you actually feel powerful because I have your back and I gave you the power. And so I really believe we grow power by empowering others to make good decisions. And that it's actually a boss of mine who I didn't work for very long, but is one of my favorite people on the planet and the best boss I ever had. And he said, your job is not to make sure the balls don't hit the floor. Your job is to know how you're going to help when they do. And it stuck. So my job is to empower other people to make decisions and do the best they can and be there if something goes wrong and be prepared to solve it.
And it sounds like also be in a powerful enough state or empowered enough state that they can solve it honestly, or, you know, with really facing it as opposed to just either downplaying it or blaming someone else or really taking ownership.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think most of the things we see that are challenges for people are not actually a surprise even to them, right? So I live in Virginia. I have, you know, our current triad of leaders all made some pretty miserable mistakes in their 20s. I think I'd like to say that they forgot. I don't know that that's true. I think they believed it didn't matter and nobody was ever going to find it. And at least one of them, I adore our governor. He is one of my favorite human beings. He's one of the top 10 most good human beings on the planet. But he made some big mistakes. And if 25 years ago, people weren't going to find out, thank you, social media, everything can be found. Everything can be found. I mean, I found a 20-year-old, found some website that said I had a criminal record. You want to know what it was?
No.
It's a 15-year-old speeding ticket.
Oh, geez.
Right? If it happened, it can be known. And so you've got to kind of live accordingly. Mm-hmm. And so there are things where I would shut up and hope, but not most of the time. Most of the time I will be like, you decide what the story is and you tell it.
Mm-hmm. And then, so it sounds like living your life as an open book, but you're the one that authored it and you're the one that is, you know, saying, here's the content.
Yeah. And I think, so I really do believe that. And I, what is it? Was it Winston Churchill's mother who said, if you never lie, you never have to remember what you said?
Maybe, I don't know. Wise woman.
Right, like, you know, yeah. What it is. And we all make mistakes. And, you know, hopefully they aren't too terrible. But even if they are, you pick up and move on. And people, Richard Nixon at the end of his career was very different than when he left the White House. He went on to do some good diplomatic work in the world and was known for that too. You know, you were, you know, you all, none of us are only our worst act.
And you don't want to be remembered for that either, probably, right?
No. So you want to control the story and then tell the next one.
Yeah. Or be able to reframe the story.
Yeah, and power is an interesting thing. Another example of ways in which we disempower ourselves. So I can remember when I was first working with the most senior level of the federal government. And I can remember saying to my boss, you used to run the Governors Association. Why would these people talk to me? And he's like, why wouldn't they? And if you have to use my name, go ahead. But like, why wouldn't they? You're asking a legitimate question about a policy position. And I suspect if any of these people actually got phone calls from 300 million Americans, that would be a problem. But somebody who was writing a policy paper that was going to be shared with a bunch of states who wanted information, funny, I got it. And I didn't, I mean, there weren't that many times I had to use his name. I was going to talk myself out of being able to do stuff. And I think we do it all the time. Why would that person hire me? Why would that person take my call? Why would that person work with me? Why, you know, why not?
Yeah, yes, very good point. Wow, okay. So I am just curious, did you tell your story?
I did. I talked about being asked.
Yes, in the corner office, okay. Okay, because I'm also wondering, you know, like you've gotten to this place where you are and you are able to, you know, sit in your own power and help other people be empowered. And I'm just curious if there was ever like, you know, kind of a challenge or a struggle that you had in being empowered along your journey that you might be willing to share to help people who might be in a similar place.
Yes and yes. I also want to share a story that you might decide to edit out.
Okay.
But I might just do it and see if it fits somewhere.
Okay.
Because I think it might be interesting. So I said earlier that I had run for office. Mm-hmm. I did well, but I didn't win. And I had a list of 1,000 people who were used to getting emails from me and helping me and used to helping me. And I thought, well, what can I, you know, how do I use that for good? And so one of the challenges in my community is about how much development is okay and how much isn't. And you can tell it was 5 years ago because that was the big, really contentious, nasty fight. As opposed to some things we've seen more recently. And so I hosted a dinner. And I decided, I invited 25 people. I invited people from either side of the argument. We did it at a restaurant. I didn't buy their dinner. They bought a ticket and I paid for the dinner to have a community dialogue. And I am actually a member of a side of that, but I also am a good convener and a good facilitator. And I thought we needed to have a sane conversation instead of pointing at people and yelling at people. And so one woman, you know, so the first question was, would the people who disagreed with me, given that I no longer had power, right? I wasn't an incoming state delegate. I wasn't a member of our city council, that on this particular issue, I didn't have any formal power. Would they even show up? Surprisingly, they did. Actually, more of them showed up than the side of the argument that I tended to favor. And one of them came in and she's like, well, who are you? And like, why do you get to have this dinner? And I was like, a woman with an American Express card. I thought we needed to have a dialogue. I knew enough of the players. I knew how to find you. And you came.
And what was the response? Particular.
I'm one of your neighbors.
Mm.
And I invited you to come to dinner, talk about things you care about, and pay for your own dinner. And I wanted to take a minute to share that story because I had no power officially. I really was just somebody who could invite people to dinner.
Right. And it also goes back to the very beginning of the conversation about, you know, power being influence and being able to use your power to influence. And it sounds like that's exactly what you did.
And there are times where I'm like, you know, I chair a board of a preschool. I am using our influence when I call people about early childhood education. But this truly was just, I'm tired of people screaming at each other. I've got their names and numbers. Let's see what happens. If nobody shows up, we'll have a good meal. You know, the people who show up are going to have a good meal. I went to a place that people like. You know, worst case scenario is we have a good dinner. And maybe we actually solve a problem. And it didn't take any more than that. I don't have any power over zoning in my town. I've never had any power over zoning in my town.
But it's also a great illustration of what one person can do, you know, to help influence what they want, the change they want to see.
Yeah. And so I think I have not always been comfortable exercising power.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is actually the question that you had started this part of this with. But it doesn't always take a whole lot. like you don't actually have to be. Yes, if you actually need to change a law, if you actually need to change a policy, you need some way to access the people who care about that. And there may be more of you than there are of them. So it might take a couple tries. It might take bringing some people with you. It might, right? Because it's a numbers problem. There's one policymaker and 1,000 people who care. But at the end of the day, we can all do stuff that matters. We can change the names of high schools. We can change the name of a road. We can change the time something happens, mostly by asking.
Mm-hmm.
And if we ask and we get no, like when I work with political folks around raising money, my thing is that I make them come back from a no, because it's not the first ask that's hard. It's the second ask that's hard, right? It's easy. It's a little hard to say, if you really care about this, could you write a check for $100? It's a little bit hard. The really hard thing is, no, actually, I don't care enough to do that. Now what am I going to say?
Mm.
Right? Mm-hmm. You know, I get it. And either I'm going to try to persuade them or I'm going to do something really easy. You know, okay, so this one isn't on your top 10 list right now. Is there anybody else I could talk to?
Mm.
Right? It's how do you come back from no? Or, you know, no, I can't do that. Great. Can you explain to me what the challenge is? Why can't you? Great. Now how do I go solve that problem?
Yeah.
It's just a chance to ask for more information.
Yeah.
I'm not the person who can do that. Great. Who is? I'm not allowed to. Great. Could you show me where it says that, please? That's the one I get in trouble for all the time.
Yes. You can't. A great unwritten rule book.
You. Can you show me? Because maybe we could change that document. Where does it say you can't?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
actually the scary, that's actually the scary one to ask, because usually nowhere.
Right. Say they can't. Right.
They're saying they can't because they don't want to, don't think it should be done. And don't think it should be done is a perfectly legitimate answer. Mm-hmm. I might not settle for it, but it's a perfectly legitimate answer. I disagree. I don't think we should do that. Okay.
Yeah. Sounds good. Yeah. So it sounds like, you know, when you're, you know, really talking about helping people to exercise their influence and their power, it's as simple as making requests, having an ask, and just not answering a question that you've never even spoken before it's actually come out of your mouth, you know?
And what do you want? I mean, in some ways it's about what do you want badly enough to settle for, to get a no. Mm-hmm. Like when I'm coaching people, I ask them to make a list of 100 things they want.
Mm-hmm.
For some people that's simple and they could make write a list of 200. For most people that I work with, take them 20 minutes to write down 10. And then I'm like, okay, and now write down all the things you didn't write down.
Right.
Right.
The things you said no to while right. You were doing this exercise.
I'm not allowed. I don't deserve. It won't happen. You don't know enough to know any of those things.
So Julie, this has been really interesting, this conversation. I'm just curious, is there something that you were hoping I was going to ask that I haven't yet?
I mean, other than that, like, you know, if some of this seems interesting and like what you need, you can go to my website and...
We'll get there. I'm just, that's my next, excuse me, that's my next question.
I don't have a question. My hope is that people who are listening see more possibility for themselves,
mm-hmm.
and more opportunity. I think we, and I live in a town where everybody, you know, the decisions people make here really do affect lots of people. So everybody takes themselves ridiculously seriously. And sometimes me included. I decided my word for the year is play. So that I don't.
Yes.
If you can take the decisions as most of us are not performing brain surgery, we make a mistake. Somebody doesn't like something we do, we don't do it again. Or we find other people. Very little that we're doing has life or death attached to it for anyone, and including ourselves. And if we could stop treating decisions that way and play with what happens if I call, what happens if I ask, what happens if I can get this ridiculous number out of my mouth and then be ready to surprise yourself and somebody says yes, right? You know, if we can make it less critical. I mean, one of the reasons I don't coach full-time is I never want to be in a position of having to coach somebody. I want them to choose me and me to choose them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the work is too intimate. And so if the takeaway is, you can get a whole lot more than you think, and all you have to do is try, and you don't get wedded to the outcome, how much would be different in the world?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that, you know, because that's like the whole idea behind like the Creative Directions for Living is, you know, really setting out on your own path and trying, playing, experimenting with what you want and just forging ahead. And so it's beautiful what you're saying.
I'm glad, because I think that is the thing, is that we get stuck, we stop. I was listening to a story this morning about a couple that have climbed like 7 peaks in the world. And they were climbing Mount Kilimanjaro the first time, and the husband got injured. Apparently it's ridiculously expensive to do these climbs, you know, in excess of $100,000 by the time the guides and the camping and the stops and all of the stuff. So they're on their second climb, and the wife is like, just go without me. Like, we're not gonna do this again. And I just can't make it. And he looked at her and he said, you don't have to climb Mount Kilimanjaro today. All you have to do is make it to base camp 2, which is right over there.
Mm.
And tomorrow you can decide again about the rest of the mountain.
Right.
You can take that kind of like little engine that could, any of these models, for just keep going in the direction of your dream.
Yes.
And don't edit the dream down to something that's easy.
Right, right.
And it's all possible.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. So Julie, if people are interested in learning more about you and learning more about what you do, how can they find you?
They can go to my website, which is iLeadStrategies.com. So I-L-E-A-D, strategies, S-T-R-A-T-E-G-I-E-S, the words iLeadStrategies.com. They can do a couple things. You can look around. There's all kinds of fun stuff, including coloring pages at the bottom of one of the pages. But more importantly, there's a little pop-up and you can put yourself on my calendar and we can talk.
Okay. And what would you like people to be coming to you with as far as like for the conversation?
I would love to talk to you if you are leading a big change effort or want to be. If you are recovering from one of those crises that we want to make sure never happen again. And I do coach a few people. So it also could be that what you want is not help changing your organization or the world, but changing your own life. And I'm always willing to have that conversation as well.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. And what are any final words of wisdom?
Open your own door and get out of your way, because we actually all need people to get their dreams.
Beautiful. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you. This was fun.
I'm Mary Jo Rathgeb, life transition coach and founder of Creative Directions for Living. I'll meet you at the crossroads where creativity and courage await.